Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And if you have a message that you want to send to the show, make sure you send it on Twitter at GoForItGant. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow at GoForItGant. And more often than not, I'll follow back. Great show lined up for you today. Expect to be joined by Hall of Famer Willie Rope. And Willie's going to talk all things NFL. A lot of crazy things going on in the NFL. A lot of twists. A lot of turns, a lot of things going on in the National Football League. And we're going to talk to Willie Rope about all those things, all those twists, all those turns that are going on in the National Football League. Also, we're going to be joined by Reginald Ballard. And Reginald, if you don't know, Reginald played Broman off the great, 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 great sitcom, The Martin Lawrence Show. And Broman would always come to the window and sneak up in Martin's house and always looking for a sandwich, or should I say a sandwich. And so Broman's going to be joining, not Broman, Reginald Ballard. He is Broman. He's going to be joining us here today. So Willie Rope, Reginald Ballard here today on Go Forward. And I want to start now in the National Football League, and I want to start with the replacement refs. And I know a lot of you are yelling and screaming and happy and celebrating right now, but the replacement refs are now gone. Okay, enough already. Shut up. Because when it's all said and done, you're going to be ended up hating those refs, because these refs are going to make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. They're going to make their mistakes too. And you're going to be hating them and being mad at them and yelling at them, yelling at the TV, Sunday in and Sunday out, because these refs are not getting the job done as well. I mean, they're going to get the job done. They're going to do a credible job. They're going to do what they have to do, but they're going to make mistakes. It's a part of anything you do in life. It's a part of being a referee. You're going to make mistakes, and they're going to make mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to make their mistakes. So I know a lot of people are celebrating. I know a lot of people are happy right now. But at the end of the day, and those refs got a standing ovation in Cleveland. I'm not Cleveland, Baltimore the other night. A standing O. How many times have you seen that? Have we ever seen a referee get a standing ovation? The referee squad, the whole referee team, the whole team of referees getting a standing ovation? Come on. We don't see that very often. We don't see that very often. But a standing O for the referees in Baltimore. And again, they needed to come back, and they had to come back, and we all know they had to come back after what we saw Monday night in Seattle. I mean, that cost, and I said this last week and have been talking about this throughout this whole time. The only time that we're going to really get the refs back and the NFL is really going to push the issue to get them back, the only time it's going to happen if The only way that was going to happen if we had a bad call that caused somebody a football game. Because injuries, that don't matter to the NFL. I mean, and the NFL was cool with that. I mean, they were cool with they're not going to tell you that they're cool, but the reality is, by putting replacement refs out there, not putting the best referees out there, you're putting guys in harm's way. You're putting guys in danger, as Darius Haywood Bay. You're putting guys in danger. You're putting guys in danger. But that didn't really – I mean – that wouldn't have changed things. That wouldn't have changed things. What changed things is what happened in Seattle. What happened in that Hail Mary pass where you had Golden Tate, A, push off, And then you had a situation where the referee called that Golden Tate made the catch. Simultaneous possession, as they like to call it. And the referee said that Golden Tate made the catch. But the human eye doesn't lie. And the human eye saw that MJ Jennings was the guy who had the interception. Jennings was the guy who had the interception for the Green Bay Packers. That was a pick. The eyes don't lie. The eyes don't lie. That was an interception. We all know that. It was an interception. We all know that. We all know it. We're not. It was an interception. Let's be real. The eyes don't lie. It was an interception. But it was called a simultaneous possession on the field. Therefore, called a touchdown tie. Goes to the runner. And Golden Tate and the Seattle Seahawks escape with a victory, 14-12. Obviously a victory that they did not deserve. They did not deserve that victory. They did not deserve that victory. And who can they, I don't know if it's a blame situation, but who can they, you look at the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, they can go point to the refs and celebrate the replacement refs. The replacement refs were good to the Seattle Seahawks because they got a victory out of it. They were good to the Seattle Seahawks because they got a victory out of the whole situation. It shouldn't have happened, obviously. It obviously should not have happened. But what else shouldn't have happened? That those replacement refs were there to begin with. That shouldn't have happened either. They should have took care of that. Both sides should have took care of that. And more, you have to blame Roger Goodell. You have to blame him. You have to blame him. They should have taken care of that. It should have never gotten to this point. Replacement officials should never have been put in this position. They should never have been put in the position they were put in. Never. But they were. But they were. And the reason for that is because the league and its officials could not come to any type of agreement. Blame who you want. I'm going to blame Roger Goodell. I'm going to blame Roger Goodell. And it's the same Roger Goodell who talks about cleaning up the game, talking about making the game safer for his players. But you're not making the game safer for your players if you have replacement officials out there. Players now are taking extra chances. And it's similar to when a substitute teacher comes in the classroom, and we all been there, done that. We've been there. We've seen it. We've been a part of it. We have probably treated a substitute bad in our day. The reality is when a substitute teacher is there, students take chances. They act a little extra. They take chances. They take chances. They know, you know, when the real people are there, I can't get away with that. But, hey, when the substitute's there, hey, maybe I can, maybe I couldn't, but I got a good opportunity. I got a chance here. I got a legitimate chance. I might as well try. And I think that's what we're seeing around the league. I think that's what we're seeing around the league with some of the hits that we're seeing and just some of the plays that we're seeing and some of the extracurricular activities after plays that we're seeing. I think those things are all byproducts of players. You know what? The real teacher's away. It's time for us to play and take some chances. And that's what they're doing. Golden Tate, he took a chance. You know what? Maybe. When you look at a Hail Mary situation, there's a lot of pushing and a lot of shoving going on anyway. I don't know if it's that blatant. I mean, that was pretty blatant. That doesn't get any more blatant than that. That was the ultimate push-off. I mean, that was the ultimate push-off and getting a rebound type situation. I mean, he just pushed off, two hands in the back. Get out of my way, Sam Shields. Get out of my way. And I said MJ Jennings. It was MD Jennings who battled with the ball with Golden Tate. And they battled. And they battled for that football. And it looked like Jennings had won. It looked like Jennings had won. And you look at it, both officials on the field at the time. One called a touchdown. The other seemed to call a touchback. And it was a mix-up there. And a lot of people talked about this, and this is something important to recognize, that these officials, if it was the real officials, they probably would have huddled up, talked about it, and then made the final decision before going to the replay. These officials went right to the replay. They went right to the replay, and the ruling on the field was a touchdown. Now, once you have that ruling, it's hard to overturn calls in football. It's not as easy. You must have undisputable evidence. I mean, the evidence must be clear cut. It must be there. It must be there. Indisputable evidence. It must be there. You must see it. It must be clear cut. If you have any questions, you can't overturn it. It has to be clear cut. It has to be definitive. And, I mean, once you got to the replay, I guess you could make an argument that it wasn't conclusive and that it wasn't definitive. And therefore, but I mean, and the naked eye never lies. And the naked eye never lies. The naked eye never lies. The eye never lies. And the eye test told us and showed us that that was an interception. That was an interception by M.D. Jennings. That was a pick by M.D. Jennings. The Packers should have won that football game. But, I mean, I guess some good comes out of it, because the reality is you may not have seen the real officials in Baltimore Thursday night, and you may not have seen them tomorrow, which you're going to see. You may not have seen them if this play didn't happen. The NFL was not in any type of rush, it seemed, and it seemed like they were pretty far apart. The NFL was in no type of rush to get these officials back on the field. No type of rush. You didn't sense any type of rush to get them back. No, any type of sense of urgency to get them back on the field. You didn't sense it. You didn't see it. The only way it happened, the reason that they got back on the field, because of what we saw in Seattle. So, I mean, in some respect, maybe the Packers took one for the team and for the greater good of the league. They took one for the team, if you will, for many teams, for all 31 teams, 32 teams, including the Packers. But they took the hit for the 31 other teams. So now the Packers are standing at 1-2, and the Seahawks are at 2-1. Who knows what could happen? I mean, as of right now, the Bears are on top of the NFC North. But what I'm saying is, in terms of what could happen, if just say the Packers don't win the NFC North, let's just say they're tied with the Seattle Seahawks, same record. We all know who the tiebreaker goes to. The tiebreaker would go to the Seattle Seahawks. The tiebreaker would go to the Seattle Seahawks. So if those teams, two teams were happened to be tied, let's say they're both won their divisions and they happen to be tied, and it comes down who gets the bye week, and then they're battling for the second seed, and let's just say the Seahawks and the Green Bay Packers have the same record. Guess who would get the second seed? The Seattle Seahawks. So this is a big game. A big game. And the reality, any loss in the conference is big. You don't want to lose in your conference. If you're going to lose outside of your conference. Lose outside of your conference. And this did not happen here. The Green Bay Packers lost in their conference to the Seattle Seahawks, and who knows what could happen moving forward. Who knows what could happen moving forward. But, I will say this. The reality is, it's good to have the real refs back. And the reality is also this. If this did not happen, if the whole situation in Green Bay did not happen, if it did not happen, if it did not happen, we would probably not see the real refs on Sunday. So, it's for the greater good that this happened. It's good that this happened this way. It's good that it happened this way. It's a shame that someone had to lose a game because of a bad call by the referees, the replacement referees. That's not good. That's not a good situation. It's a shame it had to be like that. But if it wasn't going to, if that didn't happen, the real refs would still be at home. And I think that's the reality of it. The real refs would still be at home. And we all knew that it would take something like this to get the real refs back. The hits maybe some illegal hits and some of the physical play, that wasn't going to get the refs back. That wasn't going to get the refs back. And it wasn't. I mean, the NFL can talk all they want about player safety and how much they care about player safety and how important it is for them. But when you have a situation now where you have replacement referees, guys who may not have a full handle on the rule book, guys who may let extra things happen, because of that, and when you have that situation, that tells me that, in my mind, the NFL is really not that serious about player safety. They're really not that serious about player safety. I mean, if you were serious about player safety, you would get the guys out there, the real guys out there, the real officials out there. That's what you would get. You would get the real officials out there. You would have to get those guys out there to protect the players. You would have to get those guys out there. But the reality is, the NFL, I don't think, was all too concerned about that. I don't think they were concerned about that. They were not concerned about that. They weren't concerned about that. They were concerned about money and trying to get in the best possible deal for the league. That's what their concern was. It was about money. The owners, they're responsible too, because Roger Goodell works for who? The owners. He works for the owners. So he's taken the owner's position to the union, the officials union, the referees union. So if you want to blame somebody, blame the owners, blame Roger Goodell for what happened, what transpired. And I know Roger Goodell, he apologized, sent out a little letter to the fans, but it's too late to apologize. It's too late. And all you heard each and every week, if you're on Twitter, Facebook, any other type of social network, if you're on there and you're out there, you're watching TV, all you heard was about the replacement refs. That's all you heard about. I mean, that's all you heard about was the replacement refs. That's all you heard about, the replacement refs. And what's going on with them? And they made a mistake here. They made a mistake there. I mean, they made a mistake in Tennessee. I mean, a 15-yard penalty turned into a 27-yard penalty. A 15-yard penalty turns into a 27-yard penalty. They made a mistake there. So mistakes were plentiful. They were out there. And the NFL each and every week had to tell you that, hey, the officials and these refs and the regular refs, they're throwing the same amount of flags, and they're making the same type of mistakes or as many mistakes as the regular refs, and so on and so forth. But the eye test, the eyes don't lie, and the eyes showed you that this was not a good situation. The eyes showed you that there was issues with these refs. The eyes showed you that. The eyes don't lie. The eyes don't lie. And they showed you what was going on out there. It was a mess. It was an absolute mess. And here is Roger Goodell's letter to the fans. He says he's sorry. You believe him? I don't know. Here's his letter. To NFL fans, the National Football League is at its best when the focus is on the players and the actions on the field and not on labor negotiations. True. Good point, Roger. He goes on to say, all of us who love the sport appreciate the skills and dedication of the players and coaches. That is why we are focused not just on what happens on the field, but what our game will be like in another decade or two. The NFL has tried to look ahead, to innovate, and to constantly improve in all we do. Okay? We recognize that some decisions may be difficult to accept in the passion of the moment, but my most important responsibility is to improve the game for this generation and the next. Excuse me. And Roger, I mean, he's going on and on. Get to the point. Get to the point. Get to the point. Get to the point. I believe in accountability, not excuses. And I regret we were not able to secure an agreement sooner in the process and avoid the unfortunate distractions to the game. You deserve better. I'm adding this on. We deserve better. We all deserve better, Roger. And Goodell goes on to say, as a lifelong fan, this wasn't an easy process for anyone involved. I particularly want to commend the replacement officials for taking on an inevitable task and doing with focus and dedication the most adverse of circumstances. So basically, you know, the referees, he just threw them to the wolves, and he is thanking them for what happened. The uninventable task, he's thanking them for what happened. Our new agreement gives long-term stability to an important aspect of our game, officiating. More important with this agreement, officiating will be better in the long run. While the financial issues received the most attention, these negotiations were much more about long-term reforms. And he went on to say so on and so forth. Whatever, whatever. The reality is this. The NFL dropped the ball here. They dropped the ball with these officials, with these replacement refs. They dropped the ball here. They dropped the ball. They dropped the ball. They dropped the ball here. They made a mistake. They thought that the replacement refs could keep the chains moving, could keep everything going. They thought that they can get away with this. They thought they could get away with this. But they couldn't. They couldn't. And it took such an egregious penalty, not a penalty, an egregious call by the officials for this. It took a team losing a football game for this to happen. Losing a football game because of the refs. It took that situation. It took that whole situation for the real referees to finally come back and for Roger Goodell to get the real referees back. It took all that. It took all that. It shouldn't have taken all that. These officials should have been back a long time ago. They should have been back to start the season. I thought they would be back to start the season. They weren't. The NFL says, who needs you? Pretty much, they say, who needs you? And it is what it is. It is what it is. It is what it is. But now, the real refs are back, and we're going to love them for a little bit. It's going to be a little honeymoon period, but eventually we're going to start hating them too. We're going to hate them too. You'll see. You'll see. It's going to take time. May not happen today. May not even happen tomorrow, but it's going to happen. You're going to start hating these referees. You're going to complain about these referees. Just like you complained about these replacement referees. Maybe not in the same way, but you're going to complain. You're going to complain. You're going to complain. You are. You'll see. Give it time. And one thing, and let's get onto the field now, and who cares about these replacement refs and everything? They're gone. God bless them. They got a nice three weeks out of this. They are going to get paid for this week from the NFL. So, hey, they're making money. One, I mean, what a country. It's a good thing they're making money. It's a bad economy. I'm glad they're making money. But let's get back onto the field, and let's get back to what truly matters, and that is the players, and that is the teams. And let's look at last week in the National Football League. And we thought last week, okay, best team of football were the San Francisco 49ers. We thought maybe that the 49ers would continue their dominance, beat the Packers, beat the Lions, and we thought that would continue in Minnesota. But Christian Ponder came out and balled for the Vikings, and the Vikings got the victory. And we thought the 49ers were the most complete team in football. We thought they were the best team in football. Think again. Think again. And then we watched the Arizona Cardinals and the Philadelphia Eagles, and we thought, okay, this Eagle team looks real good. Beat Baltimore by one. Beat Cleveland by one. They're 2-0. A lot of turnovers, but they're still 2-0. A lot of turnovers, but they still haven't played their best game, and they're still 2-0. But they go to Arizona. Yes, turnovers were a part of that, three of them. Two by Michael Vick, two fumbles. One fumble on special teams. Jamarius Johnson with a fumble on special teams. Three turnovers, three more turnovers, 12 in three games. That's an average of four per game. That's not going to win you football games. And it caught up to the Philadelphia Eagles this week against the Arizona Cardinals. It finally caught up to this team against the Arizona Cardinals. It finally caught up to them. You're testing things. You're testing fate when you turn the football over that many times. You're playing with fate when you turn the football over that many times and expect to win. It's just not doable. It's just not possible to continue to win when you're turning the football over three, four times a game. Against a good team, it's going to bite you in the butt. They were fortunate against Baltimore that it didn't bite them in the butt. Very fortunate against Cleveland that it didn't bite them in the butt. But it finally bit this ball club in the butt against the Arizona Cardinals. And so the Arizona Cardinals now are 3-0. Kevin Cobb, efficient last week against the Philadelphia Eagles. Played well last week against the Eagles. Played well. And that defense continues to play big-time football. They had a good game against Tom Brady and beat New England in New England, in Foxborough, at Gillette Stadium. They beat them there. And then they beat the Philadelphia Eagles. And they beat the 2-1 Seahawks as well. So this team has beaten some good football teams, the Arizona Cardinals. And one of the reasons that the Arizona Cardinals are where they're at is because of what they're doing on the defensive side of football. What they're doing on the defensive side of football, ranked 10th in the league on defense, and they're only giving up 17 points a game. No, 13 points a game this team is only giving up. 13 points a game. So they're keeping their ball club in the game. And they're going to need to play this way throughout the course of the season because of their quarterback situation. Kevin Cobb was efficient. Kevin Cobb played well. Kevin Cobb came off the bench to beat the Seahawks, started and beat Tom Brady, and then came back and beat Michael Vick. They are 3-0, but the defense is the reason why they're 3-0. And I wasn't really impressed by anything I really saw on the offensive side of football. I was impressed by what I saw on the defensive side of football with the Arizona Cardinals. But the Arizona Cardinals, they're getting it done because of what's going on the defensive side of football. Their defense is the reason. Their defense is the reason that this team is 3-0. They are the reason, the sole reason, that this team is 3-0. And they're second behind the Seattle Seahawks. Behind the Seattle Seahawks, they're second in points per game. Second in points per game behind the Seattle Seahawks. So they're not letting teams score a lot of points. That's big. And they're giving their offense an opportunity, giving their offense a chance. When you don't let a team score a lot of points, it gives your offense, who is struggling, a struggling offense, a chance. It gives them a chance. It gives them a chance. It gives them a chance. And that's what this Arizona Cardinals defense is doing. It's giving their team a chance. And I look at the NFC West. And this division, which is one of the worst divisions in football a few years back, this division now, on the defensive side of football, is big time. You got Seattle, ranked fourth in defense, first in points per game. Arizona, 10th in defense, 2nd in points per game. And then you have the San Francisco 49ers, who are, when we talked about their defense and how good their defense was going to be, they're actually 11th in defense and giving up 21 points per game. So this defense, there's a lot of big-time defense in the NFC West. A lot of big-time defense being played in the NFC West. Seattle, getting it done. Getting it done on the defensive side of football. They harassed Aaron Rodgers. 8 sacks. 8 sacks. Beat Aaron Rodgers up. And kept that team in that football game. Beat Aaron Rodgers up. And that's the reason they're 2-1. And we saw what Arizona did. They beat up Michael Vick. Hit him a bunch of times. Sacked him a few times. Beat him up last week. Beat him up. Big time. Beat him up. And that's what a lot of these players, that's a lot of these defenses in the NFC West are doing. They're beating up quarterbacks. They're beating up offenses. They're not letting you score a lot of points. Defenses in the NFC West are balling. They are balling. And that's why the Cardinals are 3-0. That's why the 49ers, little hiccup in Minnesota, but that's why they're 2-1. And that is why the Seattle Seahawks, well, you could argue that the officials are the reason why they're 2-1. But they are 2-1. It is what it is. The Seattle Seahawks, they are 2-1. And one of the reasons why is because of defense. Defenses are big in the NFC West. When you play a team from the NFC West, you better put your hard hat on. You better put your hard hat on. And, oh, the St. Louis Rams, they are an improved team. They are a much improved team from a year ago. A much improved team from a year ago. The NFC West, we were talking NFC East, and I still think that's a big-time division. A lot of people talking NFC North. But it's time. It's time now to start talking about the NFC West. It's time to start talking about the NFC West. Get your hard hat on if you're playing Seattle. Get your hard hat on if you're playing Arizona. Get your hard hat on if you're playing the 49ers, because those defenses are going to bring it. They're going to bring it. So you better put your hard hat on. You better get that hard hat on, because those defenses are tough defenses in the NFC West. And just looking around the National Football League, how about the New Orleans Saints? Speaking of, we talked about the good defenses in Arizona, the good defenses in Seattle and San Francisco. Let's talk about some bad defenses and a bad defense in New Orleans. The New Orleans Saints are just a bad, bad defense. 32. Ranked 32 in defense. 32 in defense. Giving up 34 points a game. 34 points a game. And that's second in the league. Tied with the Bengals. Second in the league. 34 points a game. Gave up 273 yards rushing to Jamaal Charles and the Kansas City Chiefs. Jamaal Charles had 233 of them, including a 91-yard touchdown run. And oh, by the way, this ball club, New Orleans, is traveling to Lambeau to play Aaron Rodgers and an angry Green Bay Packer team. An angry Green Bay Packer team coming off a loss. And coming off a controversial loss at that. So, this team, that team beating the New Orleans Saints, it seems like Roger Goodell, with this whole situation, with this whole bounty scandal, really hurt this team. This team seems, Sean Payton's not there. they're just missing a lot of people, and they're missing their leader. They're missing their leader. They are missing their leader. Their leader is Sean Payton. He is the leader of that team, the head of the leader of that offense. And we thought Drew Brees, who seemed like the coach on the field, would be able to keep that train moving. You thought Drew Brees would be able to keep that train moving. He hasn't. He hasn't. And, I mean, he's putting up his numbers, and he's had some struggles himself. But all in all, you give up 34 points a game, it's hard to win. It's hard to win. You give up close to 500 yards a game, 477 to be exact. It's hard to win. It's hard to win. I mean, it's hard to win when you're doing that. It's hard to win. You can't win in this league when your defense has been that bad. Drew Brees has to be perfect with this defense. And then New Orleans was in complete control of that game last week, if you remember. New Orleans was in complete control of that game, if you remember. In complete control, dominating that football game. And then that defense let some things happen. And ultimately, that defense could not stop the Kansas City Chiefs, could not stop Jamaal Charles, could not stop anybody, has not stopped anybody. And judging by the way they continue to play, you wonder. It's week three. I tried to make excuses for this defense the past 2 weeks. I've tried to say that Steve Spagnuolo, last time he was defensive coordinator in New York with the Giants, they won the Super Bowl that year, but that defense got off to a slow start, gave up 80 points in two games. The defense looked suspect in New York early in that 2007 season, but that defense was one of the reasons, probably the biggest reason, that that team ended up winning the Super Bowl that year. They shut down Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. But, again, O.C. Umiura is not walking through that door in New Orleans. Justin Tuck is not walking through that door in New Orleans. Michael Strahan, in his final year, he's not walking through that door in New Orleans. So the talent level is obviously a little different in New Orleans. The talent level is a little different in New Orleans. That much we know in terms of the defense. It's not the same. He and Steve Spagnuolo does not have the same talent on the defensive side of football that he had in New York. This Saints defense struggled mightily last year. It's one of the reasons that this team did not make it to the Super Bowl last year. I mean, that game against the 49ers, it was a shootout game. It was a shootout. It was a shootout in San Francisco. A shootout in the Bay Area. It was a shootout. Drew Brees seemingly did enough. He seemingly did enough. And when he had that big touchdown to Jimmy Graham, he thought that game was over. And then they allowed the 49ers to come right on back. And ultimately, they allowed the 49ers to win that particular game. They let Alex Smith go up and down the field on them. They let Alex Smith go up and down the field on them. And when you let Alex Smith do that to you, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be in trouble. And the reality is, the Saints defense was bad then, last year, and seems to be worse this year. Seem to be worse this year. They're bad now. They're bad now, and they seem to be worse this year. They're bad. This is a bad defense in New Orleans. A bad defense. And last year they were 24 when the season concluded. Now they're 32 at this point. And really don't see it get much better in New Orleans. I really don't. Drew Brees seems like he has to play the perfect game for this team to be successful. Drew Brees is going to have to play the perfect game if this team is going to be successful. It just seems that way in New Orleans. They're in trouble. They're in trouble. And Sunday's game against the Green Bay Packers is going to be a very, very interesting game for a lot of reasons, but mainly because the Packers are 1-2. The Saints are 0-3. So, seemingly, Packers win that game, the Saints are 0-4. you can pretty much stick a fork in the Saints at that point, 0-4. Pretty much. I mean, teams have gotten hot. Teams have gotten off the bad starts and gotten hot down the stretch. So they still have a shot, but 0-4, you're pretty much done. You're pretty much done. You could argue that you're done at 0-3, but 0-4, you're pretty much done. But if the Saints do win, they are 1-3, and the Packers are 1-3. And could you have, and looking at this NFL season, when this season started, could you have ever thought in your mind, you never could have seen the Packers and the Saints both being at 1-3? You really didn't see the Packers being at 1-2, and obviously you didn't see the Saints being at 0-3 at this point. But there is a possibility if the Saints can somehow rebound, somehow play defense, somehow stop the run, and Drew Brees, and we all know what he can do, there's always a possibility that the Saints could win in Lambeau. And if they do, there's a possibility that the Saints could be 1-3 and the Green Bay Packers could be at 1-3. That's crazy. When you look at that, that's crazy. And that, to me, is the beauty of the NFL. You just don't know. 1 week, and last week we were talking about how great the San Francisco 49ers were. Even talking about the greatness of the Eagles in some respect. We're talking about how good these teams were. We're talking about Arizona, they're 2-0, but we don't believe in their suspect. We talked about all those things last week. And now, a week later, and you figured, in the Willie Rolfe Bowl, the Chiefs, you thought that there was no way that the Chiefs could go into New Orleans and beat the Saints. A Saints team that was desperate. A desperate Saints team. You thought that was impossible. And I thought it was. I didn't expect that to happen. I didn't expect that to happen. But it did. It's surprising. You didn't expect San Francisco to lose to Minnesota. But they did. And it's surprising. And that's what you get with the NFL. It's the ultimate week-to-week league. And I say this all the time, but you're reminded of it so many times by the games that you see week in and week out. You're reminded that this is the ultimate week-to-week league. It's week-to-week. 1 week, you think you have it down, okay. 49ers, they seem to be complete. Okay, the Eagles, a lot of turnovers. But you know what? They're still winning. They seem to be okay, and it seems like they'll get it turned around. Okay. The Saints, yes, they're struggling at 0-2, but there's no way they lose to the 0-2 Chiefs at home. Okay? I mean, all these things. The Falcons, they look like they're for real. And they went into San Diego and dominated the Chargers. They dominated the Chargers, 27-3. Dominated the San Diego Chargers. And how about the Atlanta Falcons? How about the Atlanta Falcons? A team that's only allowing 16 points per game, only giving you 16 points a game, and an offense that is really, really explosive. Roddy White, Julio Jones, and those boys. I mean, this is an offense in Atlanta that is getting it done. Explosive. The explosive offense in Atlanta. Playing big-time football. They are explosive in Atlanta. And how about the Falcons? It is time to start talking about the Falcons as one of the more complete teams in this league. Matty Ice and some of the things that he's doing. And he's balling right now. And then we look at the Texans, 3-0, and I talked about this last week with Willie Rofe, and I thought this was a game that we would find a lot out about the Texans, and we found some things out about this team. They're for real. That's one thing we found out. They're for real. They are for real. They're for real. This team is for real. That defense is for real. Matt Schaub is playing for real. This defense, second in total defense, third in points per game. And it's not about the yardage that you give up. To me, the most important stat, I think, when it comes to defense, is points per game. Points per game is big. Yes, you can get up and down the field, put up big-time yardage, but if you're not scoring, it becomes irrelevant. If you're not scoring, it becomes irrelevant. So points per game, to me, is the most important stat when you talk about defense. And points per game with the Houston Texans, they're only giving up 14 points per game. Only 14 points per game. That's a big-time stat to me. 14 points a game. That's it. That's it. And that's third in the NFL. That's third in the NFL. So they're not letting you score, and they're scoring a lot themselves, averaging close to 30 points a game. That's all you need to know about this Houston Texans team. They look complete. They're playing complete. And they may be the best team in football at this point. Let's bring him in now, a guy who was one of the best at what he did. Hall of Famer, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you?
Oh, we're talking about the Texans right now. Doing good.
Oh, we were talking about your Texans.
I've been on the Texans bandwagon.
You've been on it. You've been on it for a while now, and I tried to poo-poo it away a little bit, but we did discuss it last week. We said that the game against the Broncos would tell us a lot about the Texans, and it showed us and told us a lot about this team. This team is for real.
And I want to tell you what, other than the ref situation that went on that last week, to me, might have been one of the most exciting football weeks that I've ever seen. You know, you had the overtime games, you had the Hail Mary, you had two Hail Marys, one tied the game up in Tennessee, I think, and then the other Hail Mary won the game. It shouldn't have been a win, but it won the game. In Seattle, you had the ratings are up. You know, the ratings are up. And, some controversy along the way, but, they had to get the refs back in, but it was some exciting football, and there was some old-school hitting going on last week. Those boys were hitting last week.
And do you think that you talked about the replacement refs, and do you think that changes once the real refs come back? I kind of felt like some of the players were taking opportunities and taking some chances, and some were getting away with it.
They were. They were still hitting the other day too with the real refs. I mean, it's just been a lot of they were taking. I just thought they were trying to run over the refs. I felt like even the coaches, they were doing stuff that they normally wouldn't do, just trying to run over those guys, and they just didn't have any respect for them. So, you take a ref that's doing junior college or NAIA and stuff like that, everybody's reading that, and, they just didn't. You could tell there was not a respect level there for those guys.
Right, and it showed, and let's talk about that play in Seattle. I mean, obviously, I said it. I don't think the real refs would be back if that play didn't happen. But you look at that play, Willie. You had Golden Tate. You had the blatant push off, and then you had ultimately the call there. But what was your initial reaction when you saw that play?
The first thing I saw was it was passing. He pushed off before he even went and got the ball. It was pass interference. I mean, and the ref that called it a touchdown was sitting there looking at it. So, I mean, it should have automatically been a flag thrown. And once you pass interference, the clock runs off, the game's over. So, even before the interception, when when they land on their back and Jennings has the ball and he takes the ball from him, you know, like you said, it was blatant pass interference that should have been called.
Right. And it was blatant. And when you saw that, where you were, at that point, I think we all realized that the real refs were probably going to come back after that.
Well, I couldn't believe he called it a touchdown. You know, the second ref that comes in doesn't call it a touchdown. He looks at it, but then the other guy is sitting there watching the guys on the ground and just called it a touchdown. He had the best viewpoint to see that the other guy caught it. So, I mean, I don't understand how he made that call. I just don't understand. He's sitting there facing those guys with the best viewpoint. So, the back judge came from the back, and he didn't call it a touchdown. But I don't understand how he did that.
And, I mean, it was a bad call, and obviously it cost the Green Bay Packers a football game. And we'll see if it bites the Packers in the butt later in the year. And Willie, also last week in New Orleans, the Willie Rose Bowl, the Chiefs, the Saints. The Chiefs would obviously ultimately win in overtime. The Saints cannot defend. They cannot stop anybody. 273 yards. They allow 273 yards rushing. A lot. That's a lot. Almost 300 yards rushing. You can't win the National Football League when you give up that many yards. They are 0-3 at this point. Are the Saints done? They're traveling to Lambeau to play the Packers this week. Are they done?
I think they're done as far as, you know, playoff team and stuff like that. I still think they can salvage and have a respectable season. But like you said, you can't win Pop Warner football giving up 300 yards rushing. You know, so, I mean, let alone the NFL, college football, you can't get win giving up to any league. So, you know, it's a tough year. I don't know now, looking at this team, the way it's structured with the defense, I don't know how good this team is with Sean Payton there. I mean, if your defense is going to be giving up that kind of yardage, I think it's still a tough season. You know, I understand maybe the offense is more efficient, but, you know, like you said about Drew Brees, I mean, what is he? He's the 25th-ranked quarterback or whatever. So Drew Brees isn't playing great football this year. But like you said, I think the offense is more crisper, but if you're giving up that type of yardage on the other side of the ball, it just like when I first got to Kansas City, you know, I think our first year we scored 30 points a few games and got beat, you know, three or four times. You know, it doesn't matter how much you score when you're giving it up like that. You know, it's tough to win games, you know, it's just deflating. You know, for a team that can move the ball to go up and down the field, and then you turn around and you sit on the sideline watching your defense, you know, letting the team just drive the ball down the field. You know, you can't. I mean, it's just a tough way to do it. So I don't know how. You know, looking at the team, you know, reminds me of the situation in Arkansas with Bobby Petrino not being there. The way Arkansas looks, I don't know how good their team is with Bobby Petrino. You know what I mean? I know those coaches make a huge difference, and it has for both those programs. But, you know, I wonder how good the team's going to be with Sean Payton even there with the way the defense is playing.
And talking about that defense, I mean, they're giving up 34 points a game. 34 points a game. So it's almost like Drew Brees has to play the perfect game
mm-hmm.
for the team to win. It's almost like he has to play the perfect game.
Well, what I would say is if they're giving up that kind of stuff, they have to start running the ball more, eating the clock more. Instead of, you know, when you score fast and you run up and down the field, you let the other team get more opportunities to score. So if I'm the Saints, I'm changing up the philosophy, and I'm going to do more running the ball. You know, you got Pierre Thomas, you got Mark Ingram. Let's run the ball, let's control the clock more, and keep the other team off the field. At least let's try to do the screen game. I'm not going to let the other team keep getting on the field if I know my defense is giving up points like that.
And also, you talked about Drew Brees, 25th-rated quarterback in football, 77 quarterback rating. I mean, that's not Drew Brees-like. That's not Drew Brees-like at all. And Again, this team is going, and I'm not going to count them out. I'm not going to count them out with Drew Brees. When you have Drew Brees as your quarterback, I can't count you out. And I'm not saying they're even going. I think they could win this week in Green Bay. I wouldn't be surprised if they won in Green Bay. Because, they're again, if you go 0-4, you're pretty much done. So this is going to be a team that's going to be desperate. And Green Bay is going to be desperate, too. So it's going to be some two desperate football
teams
out there this week.
Green Bay's got a better defense. I don't see them beating Green Bay. I don't
think they'll win, but I see it being competitive.
Okay, well, it's going to be tough to beat them in Green Bay. You know, we got more weapons, but the only way they beat them in Green Bay is if they can slow Green Bay down. The only way you're going to slow Green Bay down is keep them off the field by not letting them play. And what happened the last time, Green Bay lost the first game, and then they came back and scored a lot of points the next game. So, you're right. Green Bay, Seattle have a tough defense, and they stymied Green Bay. But they gave up 8 sacks. So, are the Saints going to be able to put pressure on Green Bay like that? That's
probably
gonna,
not.
You know, they're probably not.
But you look. But the only reason I give the Saints a chance is because, again, they're still averaging close to 28 points a game, the Saints. And the Packers, that offense has had some struggles throughout this year. So far, it hasn't been the same type of offense that we saw last year. So you give the Saints an opportunity because of the points they can put up. But because of that defense, it becomes difficult.
I know the Packers have struggled offensively, but they still can struggle and still go out there and bust the clock on you every couple of weeks. You know, yeah, they struggle and not putting up the points, but they're still going to be able to score a lot of points in certain games. And when they get rolling, you know, they can score a lot. So I hope it's competitive. You know that I want the Saints to turn it around. You know, I'm cheering for the Saints. I know the owner, Mr. Benson, would have loved for a team to host his own Super Bowl, and the team would have loved to have a great year throughout all the controversy. But with all that controversy that went on, with them letting some key players go, you can think that everything's okay and everything's going to be okay. And now they're realizing it's not going to be okay. And, you know, even the great Drew Brees, who finna tie Johnny Unitas' record for touchdowns thrown in 48 games. Even the great Drew Brees in this day and age NFL can be having a rough time and be having a rough year. And I'll tell you another thing. If they are gonna win, Drew Brees cannot throw any interceptions in his own red zone like what happened in Carolina. And that deflates the team, too. You can't turn the ball over and have pick sixes in your own backyard. I think that happened in the first quarter of the Carolina game. So he's playing a way better secondary than he played against Carolina and then he played against in Kansas City when you faced the Green Bay secondary. Those guys are some real, real good football players. So we'll see. It's going to be a good game, but like I said, he's playing, you know, one of the most experienced secondaries in the NFL when you play the Green Bay Packers, led by Charles Woodson.
And you talked about Drew Brees and his interceptions. Last year, Drew Brees had 14 interceptions. The whole year, at this point, after 3 weeks, he has 5. So that kind of tells you all you need to know about what's going on in New Orleans in terms of their turnovers, in terms of the way Drew Brees is playing, and just in terms of the way this whole team is playing. It seems like they missed Sean Payton, but to your point, you wonder how good they would be if Sean Payton was there when you talk about that defense and how bad it has been at this point. Very bad defense. Close to 300 yards rushing to the Chiefs last week. That's just – you're not going to win when you do that. We're talking Hall of Famer Willie Rofe. And Willie, last weekend we talked about your Texans, but last week we were talking about your 49ers as being the most complete team in football. Well, lo and behold, they go into Minnesota, and they lose to the Vikings. The lowly. Well, the Vikings are 2-1 at this point, but they lose to the Vikings. You feel any different about your 49ers?
No, I don't feel any different. It's football, man. I mean, that tells you the parity of the league. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. You go to the Vikings, you think they're going to have a game where it's going to be easy? It's the NFL. And the Vikings stepped up. The young quarterback stepped up. They protected well. I mean, guys were open, but, you take an outdoor team that plays outdoors, you know, and you put them inside a dome and they got to go inside and play in a totally different environment. I mean, that's tough. And they got to travel to Minnesota. So, I mean, this is what happens. This is the NFL. So I expect that's the way it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to be able to walk in somebody's home field in a totally different situation and just go in there and beat them. I mean, so, you know, the Vikings are a good football team. I think their coach has done a decent job. You know, they didn't turn the ball over or they haven't been turning the ball over a lot. So, I mean, it's a better football team than what we expected. Like I said, they did a good job. They went out there and outplayed the 49ers pretty much that whole game.
And another surprise, well, some people weren't surprised, but a lot of work. What happened in Arizona with the Eagles and the Cardinals? I mean, the Cardinals in that defense, very physical defense. They got after Michael Vick, hit him a bunch of times, and ultimately Michael Vick and the Eagles struggled. Looking at it now, Willie, we heard Andy Reid and what he said about Michael Vick. He said at this point Michael Vick is his quarterback for now. He later changed that up and said Michael Vick is his quarterback, period. But all in all, injuries and just his play, generally speaking, whether it's going to be an injury or whether it's going to be just poor play, does Michael Vick finish the season as the starting quarterback with the Philadelphia Eagles?
That's a good question. At this point, maybe he sits him down if he doesn't pick it up. I mean, Michael Vick has taken a lot of shots the last couple, this year, last year. He got hurt. He took a shot this year in the preseason. We don't know how he feels on a week and daily basis, and Michael Vick isn't the guy that's going to complain about it. But he's taking a lot of shots. I don't know. They got to run the ball. I mean, like you said, the key to these teams is running the football, taking some of the pressure off Michael Vick. When they allow McCoy to run, I don't know if you look at the stat up, if he rushes for 100 yards or when McCoy gets going and he catches the screen passes and they get him going, I think they're a lot more deadly because it opens everything up. You know, you can't just go out there and throw the football and expect to win. And we see that with Drew Brees, too. You can't just go out there and get away from the run and throw the ball 50 times. You know, I think they did that for a couple of years, but it's going to get back to regular football where run the football, play action, set everything up, Baltimore, run the ball. Yeah, Flacco takes his shots, but you're going to get a lot of Ray Rice in the passing, in the running game, and in the screen game, and then you're going to get Flacco, down the field to Torrey Smith and taking shots, but ultimately, you still got to be able to run the ball to set up some of the stuff you do. And getting back to your point, I don't think Michael Vick starts the whole season, though.
Does he finish the season as a starter?
Maybe he comes back and finishes the season. I think it's going to be a time period during the season. If they don't win, they'll pull him.
Okay. You wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if he continues to play this way, I mean, with the turnovers and everything, I mean, you can't turn the football over the way he has, whether it's the fumbles or the interceptions, and expect to stay in the game. You can't do it. You can't do it, especially now after coming off, especially with the loss. I mean, you had the turnovers in the first two games, but you won. And now you had the turnovers in this game against the Cardinals, and you lost. So I think at this point, if you continue to turn the football over, I don't think Andy Reid has a choice. Yeah, I don't think he really has a choice but to go to the rookie Nick Foles if Michael Vick continues to play the way he's playing. But
we talked about that. You turn the ball over the first couple weeks, you win the game. Everybody's still happy. But when you turn the ball over and you keep turning the ball over, it's going to catch up with you, and he can't do it. You know, so you know, you got. I don't know if you can look at Paul how much they're running the ball. You know how efficient McCoy's been this year, and how much they're running the ball compared to passing the ball. But you gotta cut down on the turnovers. And like I said, I mean, a lot of these teams that got to this pass happy offenses and all that, and got away from the run. And I think they're gonna have to realize you're gonna have to start getting back to the run, play action, and doing some other stuff to help these quarterbacks out.
Well, you look at just looking at McCoy himself, he's 10th in the league in carries. No, that's not true. Let me check that. He's not 10th in the league, but he does at this point, 3 games, 58 carries. So that's an average of 19 carries a game. So, I mean, they ran the ball a lot in the second half. I mean, by the time they started running the ball, the game was pretty much over. So, I mean, to your point, I think they do have to run the ball more and run it and have some more balance, because I think I talked about it with you last week. When you look at Michael Vick and the success that he had, the most success that he had in the league was when he was in Atlanta, and he had it where you had T.J. Duckett and Warwick Dunn as the running backs, and he ran the ball a lot in Atlanta. And that was the year they got to the NFC title game. Ultimately, they would lose to the Eagles that year, but that was the year they got to the title game. Michael Vick is at his best, I think, when there's more balance in the offense. And I don't think with the offensive line that you have right now, I mean, you're missing 2 pieces with the center and with the left tackle. When you're missing those 2 pieces on the offensive line, I think you got to protect them more, and I think you got to protect them more by running the football. And we'll see if Andy Reid does it this week, and I think the Eagles do bounce back this week against the Giants. I really do, and I expect them to win the game against the Giants in Philadelphia, a Sunday night game, a primetime game, and I think we're going to see the best out of Michael Vick and the Eagles. But we'll see. We'll see. I think they will move to 3-1. But we'll see.
They do play big games. And like you said, this is crazy. I mean, we're talking about him benching the team, and they got a chance to start off at 3-1. Did you say they have a chance to start off at 3-1?
Definitely. I mean, yes.
Yeah,
right.
So if they
exactly.
win the game, they're 3-1. I mean, you can talk about the turnover and everything you want, but if they win the game, they're 3-1. They beat a good, very, very good Baltimore team. You know, they lost the team on the road, but they beat a very, you know, Arizona's a hell of a football team. They played,
sure.
and they're going to make a whole bunch of teams turn the ball over. But we're talking about them beating Baltimore, and regardless of the turnovers, they could be 3-1. So if they play good against the Giants, I agree with you like you said, Michael Vick, everything will be fine, and Michael Vick will have his job, and they'll be 3-1, you know, almost the top of the division. So, I mean, by no way are we talking about the team that's struggling, because, you know, you're struggling, and hopefully they can put it together. I just think Andy Reid is trying to get Michael Vick a little more focused and make sure he's not turning the ball and trying to put some pressure on him. And, you know, if you want him to play better, that's a good way of doing it. You know, you're threatening to put him on the bench, and that'll make him stop, hopefully make him stop turning the ball over.
And we shall see what happens. And, Willie, we look at the AFC, and we talked about your Houston Texans 3-0 and seem to be – they seem like the best team in the AFC, but there's 2 teams right now in the AFC with the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And those are 2 teams that many people thought would be there at the end in terms of going to possibly to the Super Bowl, at least going to the AFC title game. You look at these 2 teams, 1 and 2, what team do you think turns it around? Or do you think both of these teams turn this thing around?
The Steelers or the Patriots?
Yes.
I would have to, you know, I would have to, looking at both the way those teams are structured right now, I would say the Steelers probably have a better chance of turning around. The Patriots lost some linemen. Logan's is hurt again this week. And he's hurt again this week, so I would have to say the Steelers would have a better chance of turning around. I think it's going to be a tough year for the Patriots with the line, You know, you got Hernandez out for a few weeks now. They're still young defensively, you know, and I think experience will help the Steelers. They do have the Steelers have a lot more experience on that side of the ball than they do. I know the Steelers don't, you know, their line's banged up too. Up front, they're having some issues too. But, you know, out of those two teams, I would say if somebody turned around, I would say it would be the Steelers over the Patriots. A lot of changes this year for the Patriots.
And I think I agree with you because you look at Pittsburgh and the games that they lost. I mean, losing to Oakland, that's not – I mean, Oakland's always been a tough place to play. So that's not an awful loss. I mean, obviously it's not a – it's a game you should have won, especially because you were in complete control throughout the football game. That's a game you definitely should have won. But it's not a sin, I don't think, to lose against the Oakland Raiders in Oakland. I mean, that's a tough place to play if you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I think – I agree with you. I think they ultimately do turn this thing around. The Patriots, they just don't have that same feel that they've had in previous years. You don't sense it with them. You lose against Arizona at home, and we see Arizona seems to be a pretty decent team. But the Patriots don't lose at home. Tom Brady does not lose at home. And then you go to Baltimore in a game, and obviously the Ravens, they're a good football team, but you figure the Patriots coming off a bad loss, that's the type of game you expect them to win. You expect them to come back and win that particular football game.
And it was a close football game.
Right.
It was a close football game.
But that was a game you expected them to win and come back on. And then you had the Steelers who also lost in Denver, and that's always a tough place to play at as well. So that's not an awful loss either. But, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. Willie, each and every week we like to get your top five. Last week you had San Francisco as number one in your top five. Who is your top five at this
point? And I will make an announcement about the Patriots. They have played a tough schedule. They have played a real tough schedule. So you're right. You know, that part of it, you know, you can't say because they have played a real tough schedule. And like I said, I just think they're just not playing. You know, the Patriots used to have they don't have a dominant running game. They run the ball. They had a rhyme or reason what they did, and they were very efficient. And I just don't see the team being as efficient. But you know, like I said, I hope they have a respectable year. But I really hope that the Saints can get some respectability back this year. And I'm in Kansas City to see how the Chiefs play tomorrow. And Will Shields is going in the Ring of Honor, and such a deserving guy. Came out with me in the draft and, you know, beat me for the Outland Trophy in college. And, you know, we've had a lot of respect for each other, and I got a chance to play with him at the end of his career. And you know, a guy that's a third-round pick that you put in the lineup his rookie year, the first game, and the guy that missed a game for 14 years, 12 Pro Bowls later, and, you know, he had an excellent, excellent career, and hopefully, you know, his name will be called on that ballot real soon. But back to the top five this year. Obviously, I got some teams that aren't in it, and I got some teams that moved up into it. I had to put Arizona in the mix this week, so I have Arizona at five. The San Francisco 49ers have slid down to four.
Okay.
Baltimore is at three. Atlanta Falcons are at two. And the Houston Texans are at one.
I can't really argue with that top five this week. I can't really argue with it. I think you probably got it right there. You probably got it right there. And I think you, to your point about the Cardinals, I don't truly believe in them because I don't really like their quarterback play. And so I think that's going to come back to bite them in the butt at some point. But I agree with you. I mean, they have to be in the top five this week. Two impressive performances going into Foxborough, beating the Patriots, and then beating up the Philadelphia Eagles, who were 2-0 this last weekend. So you got to put the Cardinals in there at this point, and they are playing some big-time football. And I agree with you with the Texans. They are playing some big-time football as well, and they proved to me after going into Denver that they are for real. I have my questions about them, but after going into Denver, they showed me that they are for real. They beat the Broncos, and they're for real. I agree with you. They are for real. Probably the best team in the AFC at this point. Probably the best team in football at this point. But, again, it's only week three, and the way this NFL is, it's wacky, it's wild, and it could change next week. Next week it's probably going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Willie, as always, man, greatly appreciate it. Let's do it again next week.
All right, looking forward to it.
Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer. It was a pleasure talking to Willie Rofe. You're listening to Go For It on blogtalkradio.com.
Corey Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Pizzerica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio. Okay.
Let's bring him in. Mike, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Hey, I'm actually a football handicapper for Carolina Sports, and I'm going to talk about and give you an opinion on tomorrow night's Giants-Eagles game.
Go ahead.
Okay. Now, everybody, the betting public on this game is on the Giants now. The Eagles are about a 2.5-point favorite, depending where you're looking, and I like the Eagles in this game. If you look back over the last 8 meetings between these two teams, the Eagles are 7-1 against the Giants and 7-1 against the spread. Now, the Eagles, they have their problems outside of the NFC East, but inside that division, they dominate that division, whether it's the Cowboys, Redskins, or the Giants. You throw in the fact that, you know, Knicks is still going to be out for the Giants, and, you know, it's a Sunday night game for the Eagles, a big game. I think the Eagles' offense might get back on track a little bit, but just the fact, you know, that they kind of own the Giants, so I think 2.5 is a low number, so I'd recommend everybody to jump on that if you like doing something like that.
And I would agree with you. I mean, I think the Eagles coming off a bad loss in Arizona, the Eagles who, like you said, have been dominant in the NFC East. They were 5-1 last year, I believe, in the NFC East. So they've been dominant in the NFC East. The only game that they did lose last year was against the Giants in the NFC East. But I look at it this way. The Eagles coming off a bad performance, a primetime game. Michael Vick coming off a bad performance in primetime. I think the Eagles win this game, and I agree with you. If I was betting, I think I would go with the Eagles as well.
Yeah, it's a low number. You know, the NFL is hard to handicap for sure. You know, college is a lot easier in my opinion, but you know, there's some games this weekend. What's I know you had Willie Rofe on. That's a great offensive lineman. I mean, very impressed. What's the game that you're looking at this weekend as far as a spread? Do you have an opinion on anything like that?
Well, let me look at it. And a game that I think I'm looking at and looking around the league right now, one of the games that you talked about the Eagle game. That's the game I was looking at, and I said the Eagles are going to win that football game. I believe the Eagles are going to win that football game. But another one that I'm looking at also is Green Bay against the Saints.
Yeah.
And I said earlier that I thought the game would be close, but I think there's also a possibility that this could be a blowout. You got the Packers who are favored by 4. Actually, by 8. But I think the Packers win that football game, and I think the Packers win it in big-time fashion. Both of these teams are desperate teams, but I think the Packers are going to put up the points. You've seen the Saints' defense. It stinks. It stinks.
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And I agree with you in this game because everybody's waiting for the Saints to turn it on this year and turn it around. But I got news for everybody. The Saints are bad. They're not the Super Bowl team they were 2 years ago, or even, you know, the playoff team they were last year. You throw in the fact, you know, with all the suspensions and all the turmoil down there, they're not turning around things this year. You know, they might finish last in the division, so I'm with you 100%. I think Green Bay, you know, wins, you know, maybe by 2-3 touchdowns. His 7 points is kind of low.
Yeah, so, I mean, and like to your point, that New Orleans defense can't stop anybody. 273 yards rushing against the Kansas City Chiefs last week. That's bad. That's awful. The only thing that scares me about that game is that the Saints can put up points. They are averaging close to 28 points a game. They can put up the points. You still have Drew Brees there. But I think the Packers are going to blow them out. I think the Packers are going to really blow them out, especially coming off that loss against the Seattle Seahawks. Mike, real quick, plug your site.
Sure. I'm a handicapper for Carolina Sports. You can find it at cswins.net. And my handle name is Your Bookies Money. You just go to cswins.net. You scroll through the handicappers. You'll find Your Bookies Money. I have free plays up, service package for everyone. And I do appreciate the time today.
Take care, Mike. Call back again.
I will. So thank you.
And so, and I know I talked about it with Willie earlier that I thought maybe the Packers and the Saints would be a close game, but and thinking about it now, and I'm almost had a change of heart in a lot of ways. I can't see that Saints defense stopping the Packers. I cannot see them stopping the Packers. I can't. I really can't. I know the Packers aren't putting up a lot of points, but at the same time. The Packers are not putting up a lot of points, but they're playing the Saints defense. I think you, I, and 9 of our closest friends could go out there and get it done. Maybe me, Willie, and 9 of my closest friends can go out there and get it done. Maybe. Might be a stretch. But anyway, maybe we can go out and get it done against that defense. That defense has been horrible. That defense has been bad. That defense has not stopped anybody all year long. All year long. 34 points per game is what they're giving up each and every Sunday. 34 big points. You can't win in this league when you give up 34 big points a game. You can't do it. Won't happen. Impossible. You can't win this league when you give up those type of points. You can't do it. You can't do it. And I don't think the Packers, I mean, I don't think the Saints can do it this week against the Green Bay Packers. Two desperate teams fighting for their lives. Fighting for their lives. But I just don't think the Saints have what it takes on the defensive side of football to win that game. They can't stop anyone. They have not stopped anyone. And I don't think they'll stop. I don't think they will stop the Green Bay Packers. I want to switch gears now to baseball. And I've been kind of following this race in the American League Central with the Tigers and the White Sox. And I talked about this about 2 weeks ago. I broke this division down, and I told you, and I really truly based this on schedule. And based on schedule, I thought the Detroit Tigers had the edge against the White Sox, and right now they're up one game on the White Sox. And, again, when you're the Detroit Tigers and your schedule, and you have such a favorable schedule, you're playing teams like the Minnesota Twins, who are 25 games under 500. When you're playing those type of teams, you're going to win more often than not, even though they lost last night 4-2. But the Tigers, I mean, schedule-wise, they have the advantage. And they got the last five games are against the Twins and the Royals. The last five are against the Twins and the Royals. The last five are against the Twins and the Royals. Five games. You got to win. You're thinking they're going to at least win three out of those five. And they're coming off a four-game sweep of Kansas City. But you look at it, Minnesota's been giving them some problems. They played Minnesota September 22nd. That was last Saturday. They beat them, but in that three-game set, they lost two out of three to Minnesota. They swept Kansas City, and then they lost to Minnesota last night. Now they have two more against Minnesota and three more against Kansas City. They're going to win at least three of those games. They're probably going to win at least three, and they possibly could win all four of them, all five of them, I should say. But the Tigers, I told you last week, schedule-wise, had the advantage. Schedule-wise, they had the advantage. And I still think they have the advantage in this division, all because of schedule. It's all because of schedule and who they have to play. Let's look at who the White Sox have to play in their final five. Who the White Sox have to play in their final five. And they have two more against Tampa Bay. They did win last night against the Rays. I keep calling them the Devil Rays, but they are the Rays. They haven't been the Devil Rays for years now. But anyway, they have two more against Tampa. And they won last night. So you're thinking they're not going to sweep this. So they're probably, at the most, going to win two out of three. But they could conceivably lose two out of three. They have three more against Cleveland, at Cleveland. It's at Cleveland. And you figure it's going to come down to the end. It's going to come down to the end. This thing could be even tied at when it's all said and done. This thing could be tied when it's all said and done. But I think the Tigers hold on. Miggy Cabrera balling out of his mind, battling for that triple crown. Will he get it? Will he get it? It doesn't happen a lot, folks. Does not happen a lot. And Miggy right now is battling to get that triple crown. Fighting for that triple crown. Fighting for that triple crown. And again, 327 batting average. One home run behind Josh Hamilton. One home run. 133 RBIs, 8 RBI over Josh Hamilton. He's got to do those. He's got to get the home runs. He's got to get the home runs. His average looks pretty safe, 5 points over Joe Mauer. The RBI looks pretty safe, 8 over Josh Hamilton. Looks pretty safe. He has to now do his thing with the home runs. 42 big ones. But he's got to get to 43 at least at this point, but that could change. But he at least has to get to 43 at this point. Will he do it? Will he do it? I say yes. I believe Miguel Cabrera, he's playing against the Twins and the Royals. Bad pitching there. Bad teams. Kansas City, 17 games under 500. Minnesota, 25 games under 500. Two bad teams. Two bad teams. He has an opportunity there. He has an opportunity there. Does he get it? Does he get it? I say yes, because he's playing some bad baseball teams. He will get it. And it looks like in the National League, in terms of everything, the Nationals are close to wrapping up the division in the National League East. The Reds have wrapped up the National League Central. The Giants have wrapped up the National League West. Now it's coming down, and then you have the Braves who have wrapped up the first wild card spot. It's coming down to the final wild card spot. And it looks like the Cardinals will be wrapping that up and taking care of that. They're three up against the Dodgers, over the Dodgers, I should say. Five up over the Brewers. So the Cardinals probably will wrap that up as well with five games to play. Looks like the Cardinals will be wrapping that up as well. So the National League, in terms of the division and the wild card races, is done. Pretty much done. You look at the American League, The East is still up in play, up for play, up for grabs. Obviously, the Central still up for grabs. Orioles are one game out in the East. White Sox one game out in the Central. And the A's in the West, three games out behind the Rangers. Pretty much you see the Rangers probably are going to win that division with three up, five to play. In terms of the wild card, Baltimore is probably going to get the first wild card. Baltimore or Oakland. That second one, you have the Angels who are two back of Oakland with five to play. The Rays who are three back of Oakland with five to play as well. So I look at that those standings, and it seems to me that Baltimore or the Yankees will get the top wild card spot. Oakland will get the second, but the two wild card spots will probably go to Baltimore and Oakland. I think the Yankees hold on in the East, and we'll see what happens in these playoffs. The hunt for October is on and popping. I mean, we're there. The playoffs are going to start very soon. And the team that I've been talking about, I've been touting, the team that you didn't want to see in the playoffs in the National League, the Philadelphia Phillies, have been officially eliminated last night by the Marlins. They lost to the Marlins 2-1. They're done. Phillies are out. I think everybody should be excited in the National League. And how about the Dodgers, a team, the Boston Red Sox West, a team that spent so much money in trying to get to the playoffs and brought all those players in. And now three back, five to play. Looks like the Dodgers will be sitting at home. And they tried. They tried hard. Tried very hard. Hanley Ramirez they brought in. Brought in Adrian Gonzalez. I mean, they brought some players in. Brought them in. Josh Beckett. But at the end of the day, it's not going to be enough. It's not going to be enough. Spend a lot of money in L.A., but it's not going to be enough. Just won't be enough for the Dodgers. The Cardinals look like they're going to hold on. Looks like they're going to hold on. Looks like they are going to hold on. But it seems the two divisions right now in the American League that are up for play really are the Central and the East. And I like the Tigers to win it. And I like the Yankees to hold on in the East. But we'll see. We shall see what happens. We shall see. But it's coming down to the end in baseball, more so in the American League than in the National League. It's pretty much done out in the National League. Pretty much done. Pretty much done. Pretty much done in the National League. And you would love, you know, you love the pennant races. You love the pennant races. And again, with the new wild card system now where you got two wild cards, it's great for baseball. You got a lot of teams. In a lot of cities, a lot of fans, I should say, in a lot of cities who still have something to cheer about, who can still cheer about a pennant race and enjoy a pennant race. And then now it makes the winning division much more important, because before winning the division really was not all that important. Now it becomes very important. It becomes imperative now that you win a division. It becomes imperative that you win a division. And the teams now who have won their divisions now have the advantage. They have the advantage. They have the advantage. But we shall see what happens in these playoffs. The American League, the National League. It's going to be an exciting playoffs. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward. And it's going to be the first time as a Phillies fan that I'm not going to see my team in the playoffs for a long time. Since 2007. Was the last time the Phillies, that was the first time they made it in a while, but 2006 will be the last time they didn't make it. And now this year, they didn't make it to the playoffs, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be different for me because I'm used to having my Phillies in the playoffs. I got a little spoiled over these past few years. I got a little spoiled. Got spoiled. Got to see my team in October for the last 5 years. Starting in 2007, It ended this year. But it was a great run in Philly. And I don't think the Phillies are done. I don't think the Phillies are done. I think they can retool this thing and be right back at where they were the past few years. They can be back. They could be back to being that team that they were a few years ago. They can be that team. But we'll see. We shall see. We shall see. But again, as we move on now, going back to the National Football League, I know a lot of you are happy. The replacement refs are gone. The real refs are back. So I know a lot of you are really happy right now, really jumping around, celebrating, dancing in the streets, dancing in the streets right now. I know you are. You're dancing in the streets because the real refs are back. And heck, like I said before, they got a standing O from the Ravens faithful, a standing ovation. How many times have you seen that? How many times have we seen the referees get a standing ovation? You don't see that. You don't see it. Everybody hates the refs. Everybody hates the refs. But right now, everybody loves the refs. They love the refs. And we shall see if the refs mess up this weekend. You're listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio.
Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Pichirica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man Pauly G and Jeremy.
And we're back. And we're going to be joined now by a man that we all know and love. He was bro, man. He was on the fifth floor. I got four fingers up. He was on the fifth floor, and we remember him from Martin. What a great, great show. What a great, great show. What a classic show. We know him as Bro Man, but his mama know him as Reggie. Let's bring him in now, the one, the only, actor, comedian, Reginald Ballard. Reginald, how are you, man?
What's up? What's going on, brother? Y'all got a couple of serves, sandwiches.
I'm just chilling. Just chilling.
I hear you, man. I just landed, man. Just got back in L.A.
All right. And let's talk about the character, Bro Man. First of all, how'd that come about?
Oh, man, it's funny because Benny Richburg, man, he was one of the producers on the show and the writers, and he had had to get a script in right quick the next day, and he said he was running late that night, and he said he was writing the character. And he couldn't come up with a name, so he just put Brother Man on there. And he said he's going to, you know, figure out the character name, you know, the next day. So when I came in the audition, man, I started saying Bro Man. You know, that's how we talk in Texas. And
right.
I started saying that. And when I went to audition, man, they loved it. Martin and them, they was like laughing. They was crying. So that's how it came about, man. Then we just made up a lot of stuff as we went along, man.
Did you think it was going to be as popular as it was?
Nope, I didn't know. And when I did it, and when I knew it was popular, my aunt had the band from Houston come down for the Rose Bowl one time, the high school band, and she told me to come over there, you know, and she's going to be at this restaurant. I went over there, and as soon as I walked in the door, man, the whole school, the band, they just jumping on me and screaming and hollering. I was like, wow, what's this for? And they was like, you know, that's when I knew, you know, that the character was something special.
And it was special, and it was a great run on Martin for you. And obviously during that time, I'm sure peeps were running up to you left and right saying, hey, that's Bro Man. Yo, that's Bro Man.
All
you
the
got
time,
any crazy stories
time.
With that?
All the time, man. I mean, Man, you know, one time, it's funny because we came out, you know, when I really knew that this thing was taking off, is we came out, we taped one night, and so me and my wife and my cousin was walking back to the parking structure because, you know, when you're not a regular on the show, they don't put you right close to the set. You got to park in the structure. So I'm walking back to my car, man, and this girl, man, she just saw me and bust out screaming and charging and running at me. And my cousin said, boy, you better run. I said, oh, no, nah, I'll be all right. Then I started walking a little slower, you know, a little faster. Then all of a sudden, she was just screaming, coming full speed. Man, I ended up having to start running, man. I'm like, this is crazy.
What's she cute?
No, she was a big girl, man. She was a really big
okay,
girl,
then
man.
Maybe you should have ran.
Yeah, I don't know if I could have slowed her down. But she was coming full speed. I got to put one of them linebacker moves on her, you know.
Definitely. On her. And talk about being on the set with the great Martin Lawrence. I mean, how much fun was that?
Man, I had so much fun over there, man. I had a real good time. But believe it or not, I had even more fun on Bernie Mac, man. I did Bernie Mac for 4 years.
Right.
And see, that's the show that it's funny because I did a lot of things before Martin. I did a lot of things after Martin. But people just remember, they remember the Martin thing because it was such a strong character. But we had a good time on there, man. I mean, you know, Martin, to me, I say it was like, you know, for me going to, like, comedy, you know, getting comedy college, man. Like, I got my master's, you know, from the Martin show, and I got my PhD from Bernie Mac. That's how I look at it.
Definitely. And, you know, you talked about your experience with Bernie Mac, the late Bernie Mac. How much fun was that for you?
Man, that was a picnic, man. That was a ball. We did that so well. It's like we played off each other, man, like it was like we were boys for 30 years, man. And that dude was so cool. He's one of the coolest cats you could ever meet, man.
Right.
Yeah, he was a real cool dude, man.
Sad that he had to go so soon.
Yeah, I know it. But that was my boy. He was all right, man. We had a good time over there. Everybody was cool, the writers, the producers, and, you know, man, all the way from just everybody, man. Exec producers, they were cool. I had a good time, man, with Larry Wilmore. You know, he was one of the execs over there. And Warren Hutchinson, man, they were some fun guys to work around.
We're talking to Bro Man from the Fifth Floor. Reginald Ballard, and I got my four fingers up for my man, four fingers up. And looking at you now, looking at everything that you've done, I mean, obviously you did Martin, you did the Bernie Mac show, but you also play a little football yourself, Division I football player, linebacker at SMU. Ray Lewis
That's
got
right.
nothing on you.
That's right, baby. That's
I mean, did
right,
you have
baby.
A shot at the league? Did you have a shot at the NFL?
Yes, sir. New England was a draft me, man. But, you know, I was done, man. I didn't want to play football no more, man. I was like, you know what? It was time, man. It was time to I knew I wanted to act, man, and I majored in theater. And it's funny because, you know, my last year when we got the death penalty, man, I went to Missouri my last year. And I told my friends after I left, you know, I didn't even take my finals, but I said, I'm finna go to Hollywood, man. I'm finna go hang with Stallone. And I said, the next time you see me, I'm gonna be on TV. And man, I left and I went to Hollywood. The first movie I did was a movie with Stallone. The next time I seen the dude, man, I was on Martin.
Wow. Did
how,
he recognize
that's
you?
How it worked out. Huh?
Did he recognize
yeah,
you?
Yeah, they recognized it because when I seen him, you know, I seen him in San Antonio. And was like, man, you said that, man. You said you was going to do that. And that's how that went down.
And you played at SMU, and funny thing, I was on YouTube today, mm-hmm. and I was watching the documentary about SMU football, and there was a three-second clip of you walking in. And the funny thing is, you had the same walk then that Bro Man from the Fifth Floor had on Martin. Talk about that walk.
Man, that wasn't the same. You know, that's a knee injury I had. And you know, sometimes I might favor that knee, and that may make me walk like that sometimes. But I know I seen that clip too. I was like, I was a little bitty dude then, man. That's when all the coaches came over trying to recruit us, man, to go to other schools after we got the death penalty.
And how crazy was that?
Oh man, it was so wild that when they gave us the death penalty, man, you know, the NCAA investigator, man, he was so much stress under him, man. He passed out, man. That's how he gave us the death penalty, man, then he fell out. So it's like it was that intense around there, man. But after that, it was like coaches from all over the country, man. It was almost like, man, a kid in the candy store. Because,
right.
You know, we had a good team. Everybody there, man, I was second-team defense. Well, you know, they had to write up in the paper, like, my freshman year, man. I was on the second-team defense my freshman year. And they was writing up in the paper that other teams in the country were killed just to have our second-team defense. Because we were fast, man, and we was bringing it to them. Because that's why SMU was so good, because they first team and second team was almost identical. You know, they'll put the first team in for a series. And then after that series, they put the second team in, and we didn't lose no steam.
Right. And that whole time at SMU during the 80s, all the craziness going on, people, players getting paid, and all that craziness. Talk about that whole situation. Talk about the death, not the death penalty, but some of the things that caused the death penalty.
Well, the thing was, man, you know, SMU was a unique situation, man. SMU was right there in Dallas, in the middle of Dallas, North Dallas, and we had, man, we were bigger than the Cowboys then. I mean, it's like, you know, we played at Texas Stadium, but the thing was, man, it was a linebacker named David Stanley, man, and he was, you know, he was one of them cats that, you know, didn't have that much emotion, man. He's gonna get on the bench press, man. He'll bench about 400 pounds and won't even have a strain on his face, man. I mean, this dude just was deadpan at all times. And, you know, come to find out, you know, he was upset with the coaches because I know my sophomore year, I think I ended up taking his position. They put me in front of him. And he told me personally, man, he said that, this wasn't even in the documentary, but he said that, he said, Reg, if I go down, he said, I'm going to take everybody down with me. I'm going to take the whole program down. And that's what he did, man. You know, I never paid much attention, but, you know, that's what he did. He was that type of dude, man. He was that distraught. And you know, he got involved in drugs. And, you know, one day his car got shot up, you know. And I remember Coach Collins didn't want him to stand by him in practice. He's like, man, don't stand by me. Don't stand by me, son. You know, your car getting shot up, they might shoot and miss you and hit me. So he was involved in some old kind of stuff, man. And I heard on the documentary, I didn't know this, but they said he ended up having a heart attack, man, 2 years ago and died.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's probably so much stress on him, man, that, you know, alumni is all over the nation probably looking for him, you know.
And you look at SMU today, I mean, it's starting now just to get over that.
Yeah, man, in like 25 years, man. It took, like, our last bowl, we went to the Aloha Bowl and beat Notre Dame. It was like 25, 27 years ago. But they went back to the same bowl 25 years later, man, and played. So it took 25 years, you know, since that happened. And, you know, the NCAA know. They now that they can't do that to another college program, and because not only did it hurt our school, but the whole Southwest Conference is non-existent, and so they know, you know, I guarantee that's why they didn't do it to Penn State. You know, I mean, you know, they gave money to players, but Penn State, you know, man, they was getting kids, man. You mean tell me that you can't take that program away, but you could take a program like, you know, SMU for giving money? Come on, man. But they know
I do disagree with you a little bit on that. I thought that the Penn State situation, the SMU situation caused a competitive advantage. The Penn State situation really didn't cause a competitive advantage. I don't think Penn State should have got what they got, but
yeah.
It is what it is.
I understand that too, man. But at the same time, when you have coaches, man, and assistant coaches, you know about stuff. I think when you're giving money to a program, okay, if you're going to punish somebody, punish the coaches that did it, fire the coaches, you know. So,
right.
in Penn State case, okay, by the coaches. You know, but okay, in our situation, you know, why you hurt kids that didn't get paid? So I understand mm-hmm. Penn State, you know, kids weren't involved in that kind of stuff that was going on. So, yeah, they shouldn't have got their opinion. But if you're going to be consistent, you know, because a program does wrong, or, you know, even though it's not in the NCAA guidelines or bylaws, but I still feel that, you know, they should coaches as they should have at SMU file a coach to keep the program. You know, mm-hmm. but now I don't think if they get caught giving money to players now in any big time institution, they'll never give a death penalty again. I guarantee you that, man. Because Miami went through the same situation. They didn't give them the death penalty. You know, they definitely wouldn't give it to Michigan. Michigan have, 105,000 fans every week? They had it, please. SMU was a prime target, man. I mean, we had national recognition, and we was winning. We was 3 in the nation at one point. But it's like we was a small enough school not to damage the NCAA financially. So what they did, they said, we're going to make an example out of this school. And what they did, they made an example out of school, and it ended up causing a domino effect, and all the schools in the Southwest Conference suffered the consequences.
We're talking to Bro Man from the Fifth Flow, Reginald Ballard. And Reggie, we talked about the SMU situation, and we also talked about your situation on Martin. Martin, you got your master's. Bernie Mac, you got your PhD. And you're a stand-up comedian right now. What can fans expect at a Reggie Ballard show?
Oh, man, it's been wife and kids stuff, man. Talking about my wife and kids and life, man, and what's going on today. You know, now, last night, as a matter of fact, I just got back to L.A. today. I was in Delaware last night with Michael Collier. Wow. And, man, we had a ball, man. We were talking about politics on stage, man, and, you know, man, Mike just got divorced, man. He's bragging with his wife for like 27 years, man. I ain't never thought they would split up. But we talk about stuff like that on stage, man, about what goes on in our families, man. So I talk about, you know, how, you know, my wife and my kids, man, you know, how if I can get rid of them without going to jail, how I would do it. I told somebody, I said, if I kill my wife and not go to jail, I said, what if I got a king-size snicker ball and froze and bust upside head and ate the evidence? You know, something like that, man. So, you know, so I go around and do that. And then, you know, stuff, the current event type stuff, man, like how silly that Romney is right now. You know, Romney is I'm glad Romney running, man. He's the best thing that ever happened to Obama. he's Obama's secret weapon, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that's
every time they open his mouth, you put him and his wife in it.
Definitely. So you're traveling all across the country doing this now. How much fun is the road?
Oh, man, it's fun, man. I've been all over this country like 8 times, man, and I've been to like 15 other countries, man. And, man, I have a ball, man. I love what I do, man. I mean, I'm not rich in money, but, you know, I think I'm a rich man because I'm making a living doing what I love to do, you know.
Right.
I love to entertain, man. And now I'm going to start shooting my own films, man. I hooked up with this cat out here, man, a filmmaker, man, and I'm excited about that, man. I'm ready to jump into that, man, because I just did a film the last 2 weeks in Delaware. I was there. Me and Michael Blackston was doing the movie, man. You know, the African King of Comedy, you mother sucker. You know, who didn't say that all the time? And we did a film out there, man, and it was funny because I was directing and helping shoot, you know, and I found it natural, man. It was like a natural thing that came to me, man. And I'm like, you know what? It's time to go to another level now.
So you got the stand up going on. You got any acting roles other than what you talked about? What's going on in Delaware? But do you have any other things going on?
I have the next thing. I did an episode of Ant Farm, man. If you're a kid, you know what it is. It's a Disney thing for kids. It's these three girls, man. One of the girls, I think, was on the Tyler Perry movie. And this girl can sing, man. She can sing. I'm talking about she's singing like Beyonce right now at her age, man. And I did an episode of that, man. And, you know, before that, I did Rosalie and Isles. Still grinding, man. Still trying to feed the kids.
Definitely, definitely. Kids definitely got to eat. Kids got to eat.
That's
any means necessary.
I'm like, boy, didn't you just eat people yesterday? You only began a day, boy. Here it is Saturday. You just ate wings.
And on the show, Reginald, we like to play a game called Who's Better. I'll give you two things. You tell me which one is better. You ready to play?
I'm ready to play, man.
Better looking, Pam or Gina off Martin?
Oh, man.
Tashina Arnold.
I'm going to go with Tashina, man, because, you know, she got the body to go with it. You know, Tisha is beautiful, but she ain't got that body like Pam had.
But I think if we were in the 80s, though, you would have chose Tisha Campbell.
I don't know. I was on the set with both of them, man. Tisha, personality was a sweet, lovable girl, you know, but she just was straight up and down, man. one time, Tashina was, me and Tommy were sitting on the couch, and she was bending over. She had some white Daisy Duke shorts on, and she was bending over right in front of us. And me and Tommy looked at each other like, oh, my God. Why is she doing this, man? It's like she was doing that like on purpose, man.
Better comedian, Martin Lawrence or Bernie Mac?
Oh, that's a tough one, man. That's a tough one. Do I have to pick one?
I'll let it go.
Yeah, man, both of them, man. If you really had to come down to it, you know,
come to your head.
The edge, I might have to go with Martin, man, because Martin can get through some different characters, man.
Right.
You know, I mean, he so many. I mean, what you said, me crying, laughing, man, when he did. That Dragonfly Jones, dude. That Dragonfly Jones, man. I couldn't stop laughing, man. It's kind of laughing. You can't even hear yourself laughing no more. That's the kind of stuff he used to have me crying, you know, because I knew somebody like that when I was in high school. I knew an older cat used to hang with us high school dudes, or with the high school kids, man. He had a Corvette, and he had big, bold letters on the side of the Corvette called Karate Man. if you had to break it down, but you know, I would pay to go see both of them cats, man.
Right.
And you know, Bernie just was naturally, man, funny as, you know, he just off the top, man. You know, I think far as off the top is concerned, Bernie Mac, man. Bernie Mac had his down. Because off the top, he just could go. He just can, you know, he have his own characters within himself, but they him. You know, and that's what make him unique. You know, he just, you know, you can have a stick on the subject, and Bernie can go on that subject, and just have you cry laughing.
Right. And last one, better Martin character, Martin, I should say, Shanae or Bro-Man from the Fifth Flow?
Of course, Bro-Man from the Fifth Flow. Nah, you would say Dragonfly Jones, it could have been a different story.
Okay, okay.
But I think I can handle Shanae.
Okay, I agree with you.
And that's the thing, that was the thing, man. You know, the character, because of, you know, the theaters I did have in college, man. You know, and I knew that when you don't have many lines, then you have to use your body and your expressions, man, to get it across.
Right.
And that's what I did, and that's what got it across.
And real quickly now, where can we find about some of the great things that Reginald Ballard has going on?
Oh, man, you know, you can go, you know, to my Facebook, man. I have stuff, Reginald Ballard, and my Twitter, you know, is Brubman_5FLO.
Okay.
So, and I, you know, talk sometime where I'm going to be or what I'm with projects I'm working on. You know, they can keep up with that.
Sounds good, man. I mean, this was an honor. This was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. And let's do this again.
No doubt, man. Pleasure all mine, man. Thanks a lot for having me.
Take care.
All right, brother.
Reginald Ballard, Bro-Man from the Fifth Flow, eating a turkey sandwich, syrup sandwich, ketchup sandwich, and all that good stuff. Again, make sure you follow him on Twitter at Bruhman, Bruhman underscore 5Flow. So we want to thank him for stopping by. Also, we want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by as well. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Follow us on Twitter at GoForItGant. For everybody here at GoForIt, see you later. Take care. Bye.